Hey, good morning, and welcome to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460. Dr. Trudy Pratt is on special assignment today. I'm Eric Lancaster, and our in-studio guest host is Dr. Craig Crapper. Dr. Craig, welcome.
Eric, thank you.
And you're obviously a doctor. What are you a doctor of? What's your specialty?
Well, Eric, today we're going to talk about dermatology, among other things. Dermatology is the medical study of skin.
Skin.
Skin problems, skin health, pretty much everything to do with skin. And as far as the training and credentials that allow me to be a dermatologist, they started at UCLA Medical School and then, believe it or not, a year of surgery internship up every other night. And then 3 years in Miami, Florida, at perhaps the finest dermatology training program in the world. And few years in Southern California, and then a lot of years here in Redding, California, where we have one of the largest dermatology practices in the state.
Is it a private practice, or are you affiliated with somebody?
We are a private practice, and we have two physician assistants working with me in Redding, and we also have a fairly substantial clinic in Eureka, in the 140-year-old Vance Hotel. It's a beautiful clinic with an ocean view and 14-foot ceilings. It's really charming there. So my time is split, but it's mainly here in Redding.
Mainly here in Redding. And you've been here for how long?
13 years.
13 years. Great. So talking about skin. Skin seems to be in the news all the time. You can't turn on the TV without seeing some kind of new formula, new microderm, abrasive, fill in the crackles, Botox, inject me here, take a pill, and I'm going to look 20 years younger. And it's just kind of funny to see this all of a sudden, and I have to kind of blame it a little bit on the baby boom generation, but why are we seeing this huge shove towards we've got to look younger, our skin has to be perfect?
It's a cultural phenomenon, and it probably does have to do with the way the baby boomers interpret the world. But it's not necessarily a bad thing, a wrong thing, or something unique to baby boomers. I think that physical appearance is important even to infants. They can tell the difference between attractive and unattractive people and react accordingly. So looking good matters. It matters fundamentally. And in dermatology, we always have the overlap of clinical concerns, skin problems, and how the skin looks. And a lot of times the two overlap. And so there are a lot of gray zones between skin problems and looking good. Sometimes the skin's fine, but there are ways to make it look better. Sometimes there are skin problems, and how they're dealt with can in large part determine how good the skin ultimately looks once the problem's addressed, whether it's skin cancer, acne, rosacea, whatever.
So you deal with just, hey, doc, I've got this funny rash I rubbed up against a bush, to, hey, doc, what is this?
The beauty of dermatology and the thing that makes it so fun and makes me want to go to work every day is that you never know what's behind door number one, two, or three. It's almost like let's make a deal, because a lot of things are very routine and ordinary, but there are always unusual and interesting things that keep it lively.
Great. That sounds like a lot of fun. Hey, you're listening to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460 with Dr. Craig Crapper. Sitting in for Dr. Trudy Pratt. She is on assignment. We'll be right back after these messages. And welcome back to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460. Our in-studio guest is Dr. Craig Crapper. Go ahead and give us a call at 530-605-4567. You can listen to us on the web at kcnr1460.com. And Dr. Crapper, welcome back. You've got a laundry list of stuff we wanted to talk about today. I mentioned skin creams and stuff you put on your face and skin. What is out there for us?
Well, there's so many things out there, but in deference to Trudy and her show about living healthy naturally, I think there are a lot of natural things that can be done for the skin as well, and even for many ailments. But it's important to know that there are things that really damage the skin. There are two main damaging things that should be avoided at all costs.
And those would be?
Number one, cigarettes. They damage the skin tremendously. They make it saggy, wrinkly, sallow, and they are toxic to skin. In fact, if you go to Germany and look at their cigarette packages, they have warnings that cigarettes will make your skin look older and wrinkled. I think we should probably have those type of warnings here. It would probably go a long way towards decreasing smoking.
I just saw in the news the other day there's a push to put pictures on cigarette packages of what you will look like if you continue to smoke. Everything, rotten teeth to, like you said, ugly sallow skin.
Yeah, I'm thinking that the ugly sallow skin would really be a hit. I mean, that's probably going to discourage people as much as showing some rotted out lung on the package. But because people, as we talked about, do care about how they look. So that is one thing, and the other thing is sun exposure. Now, sun exposure is a mixed bag because tan does look nice. I think that's perhaps cultural, but perhaps it's true.
Especially here in California. I get my farmer's tan every summer.
Right. And some people never get skin cancer, but some do. Part of that is inherited tendencies, and part of that is just random. But everybody, even those with the darkest skin types, develop sun damage from chronic sun exposure, and that sun damage is manifest by thinning of the skin, wrinkling, sagging, uneven color, and dilated blood vessels, among other things. And that's pretty much universal. The fairer a person's skin is, the more likely those things are to happen, and the sooner they'll happen. But it happens to everyone.
And so that's where we get that leathery look. The cowboy that's been out on the range, the person that lives in Lake Havasu, and all they wear is the bathing suit.
That's where we get it. And if you doubt that, just take a look at your forearm and put it up against the covered area that's normally covered by underwear, and take a look at the difference in the skin tone and texture and quality, and you'll see what sun does. In fact, all you really need to do is look at the flexor forearm versus the extensor forearm, and you'll see that there's a substantial difference in sun exposure and quite a difference in how the tone, texture, and damage level of the skin is, particularly in anyone who's over 40. So those are important things. Sunscreen is important. However, as we know, vitamin D is also important, and sunlight is the way many of us make vitamin D. And in this country, there is an epidemic of low serum vitamin D levels. And with low serum vitamin D, there are a number of health problems that are speculated to occur. One, of course, is failure or inability to make really strong bones. But there are other possible health consequences. It's believed that vitamin D is important in cancer surveillance and other metabolic activities. And so, these days, it's important to know if you're vitamin D deficient, and there are simple blood tests to determine that. Usually, vitamin D supplementation can orally correct vitamin D deficiency, but not for everyone. Some people actually require ultraviolet light exposure to get their vitamin D levels up.
So if I, say, live Pacific Northwest, Seattle, Portland area, where the sun does not come out all that much, most people up there are, you know, much paler than those of us who live down here in the Golden State. Right. Is that an issue if I'm an indoor kind of person all the time?
It absolutely is an issue. And back in the day, before we had sunscreens and before we really encouraged people to stay out of the sun to protect their skin, vitamin D deficiency wasn't such a problem, and we had vitamin D supplementation in our milk.
I remember that. Growing up, when vitamin D came in.
And we still do, but not everyone drinks milk every day, and not everyone takes a vitamin pill, and even vitamin pills don't have enough. So right now, federal government's revisiting how much vitamin D is recommended daily as a supplement, and it's going to be greatly increased.
So how do I know if I'm vitamin D deficient? Is there something I need to be looking for in my daily look in the mirror in the morning, you know, or is it something that I can say, hey, man, I just don't feel right, do I need vitamin D? And
it's something more subtle, and in most cases, patients or people won't even know they're vitamin D deficient. But metabolically, there are consequences. They're subtle, and they're slow to manifest, but they do occur. And so a good rule of thumb is to take 2,000 international units of vitamin D daily. I certainly do that. I take it in divided doses. And it's probably a good practice. However, the formal recommendations are not out yet. And if someone's working outdoors all the time, particularly without sunscreen, they're not going to need that vitamin D. You can have a blood test. It is easy to get it and fairly standardized. and that will tell you if you're vitamin D deficient if you're really curious.
And I'm guilty of this. I do not like putting on sunscreen. My wife is a redhead, very fair-skinned. She brings SPF 5000 with us every time we go out on the lake on the boat, and she slathers everybody. I always have, quote-unquote, the healthy tan every summer, and she, you know, will burn a little bit, but she's always on the sunscreen. You know, am I more at risk of skin issues than she is, or... you know, how does that work with the sunscreen? And which sunscreen, you know, which one's the best? Is the higher number the best?
That's a whole other can of worms. First of all, there are incredible genetic differences in susceptibility to sun damage and skin cancer. They're a little bit separate. Sun damage has more to do specifically with total amount of exposure and the overall ability to pigment. In other words, the overall ability to tan. Your wife, for example, can't tan, so she's just going to burn. She will get damaged much more quickly than you will. But there are other factors that are complex in terms of how they occur. They probably have to do with how the immune system deals with genetic damage to skin cells caused by ultraviolet exposure, because that's how cancer develops. The sunlight is a perfect carcinogen. It can both initiate, promote, and ultimately cause skin cancer. And the immune system is the system that deals with cells that are partially damaged before they go all the way to cancer. And certain immune systems work differently. We are all a little different in how our immune systems function. And certain ethnic groups, generally speaking, have immune systems that don't deal with skin cancer or pre-cancer all that well. Those ethnic groups are most typically Celtic and specifically Irish.
So people that live in a less sunny climate, northern area,
yes,
that, or is it,
yes,
specifically to that
specific
British
to
Isles?
That,
to
it's,
that?
It's specific to that sort of genotype. So it's a genetic thing. And it's not, for example, Norwegians and Siberians, what have you, Koreans, I mean, they all live just as far north as the Irish do, but they don't have the same problems. It's a genetic problem.
Very interesting. And we're going to take a quick break here. You're listening to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460. Give us a call if you've got a question for Dr. Crapper, 605-4567. We'll be right back after this. Hey, welcome back to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460. Dr. Trudy Pratt is on assignment today. She has called on Dr. Craig Crapper, local dermatologist here, to fill in, and we're taking your phone calls here at 530-605-4567. We're also streaming live on the internet at kcnr1460.com. Go ahead and tune in. If you got a question, give us a call. We were talking about sun exposure, vitamin D, and everybody's favorite controversy, what SPF should I use?
Well, the SPF system is outdated. It's outmoded, and it's going away. It's going to be changed completely. And the reason is science. SPF only deals with UVB, ultraviolet bandwidth B. But we know that UVB isn't the only hazardous substance for skin. In fact, UVA is also an important toxic ingredient for skin. And granted, it's in all the tanning salons, and that's why they now have nanny government stickers warning people that they cause cancer, because they do. So right now, there's no way for a consumer to know what the UVA protection level is in their product. And that is almost as important as the UVB protection. The problem is that UVA doesn't really cause a lot of burning. It causes tanning, but it also damages the skin. So sun protection factors, SPFs, are based on how much relative light you need with UVB before you get a burn. But because UVA doesn't burn the skin, it's much more difficult to do a test to determine how much UVA protection there is. Those tests have now been devised. And so product labeling will be required to change as soon as the FDA, which is quite an interesting organization, which is completely dysfunctional, I might add, and once they finally after delays of at least a decade, get this new labeling out. The new labeling will have an SPF with a maximum of 50 that will indicate the UVB rating. And then they will have a plus system, one to, I think, four pluses in terms of how much UVA protection there is. And the UVA protection and UVB protection ratings on the product will need to have equal prominence. So moving forward, we will have two ratings. We'll have the UVA rating and the UVB rating. Of course, the UVB rating is the one we know as SPF. SPF will be capped at 50 plus. It really should have been capped at 30 plus, but industry pressure made the FDA decide to go with 50 plus. And what does that mean? Well, if you have an SPF of, say, 15, you're blocking 93%.
If you have that much?
Yes.
I obviously didn't say that, but didn't realize that 93% of what I'm being is what's being blocked.
Yeah, because it's 14 out of 15.
Okay.
And if you have a 30, you're blocking 29 out of 30, or 97%.
Okay.
If you have a 50, you're blocking 98%. So from a 30 to a 50, there's only 1% difference. And that difference is actually background noise. And the reason it's background noise is because the way these are measured are with a certain amount of product per square centimeter. And the problem is that in practice, human beings put on only a small fraction of what's used in the testing. And so if you've got a 50 and use a small coat versus a 30 and use a large coat, you actually get more protection with a 30 in theory, potentially. So the problem is that the SPF levels that are advertised are with a certain amount of product. And with the amount that people actually use, the real SPFs are probably a quarter to a half of what's listed, unless you really slather it on.
As I say, we really are supposed to slather it on, so to speak, so it's a good coating over everything we need to cover.
Yes. Yeah. And the problem, of course, is that the higher the SPF, the less aesthetically pleasing the product is, the less cosmetically elegant it is. And the less elegant it is, the less you want to use it.
It's like the old zinc oxide on the nose.
Right.
Yeah. When we were kids,
yeah.
You were the oddball out at the swimming pool because your mom's put the zinc oxide on your nose. So
that's the antithesis of cosmetic elegance. But
yeah.
The fact is, actually, zinc oxide is one of the best UVA screens we have. There are new UVA screens that are chemical. They're under development, and they're used in other countries. But no real good ones here just yet.
So are we going to see more zinc oxide in our suntan lotion we grab off the shelf at the store, so we've got a little more of a marketing?
In the short to midterm, you'll see that. But then as these newer UVA chemical sunscreens come into play more, they'll probably be a little more elegant because with zinc oxide, you have to work it in. There tends to be a little bit of a cast to it. So, yes, you'll see more zinc oxide and titanium dioxide as well, which isn't quite as effective, but oftentimes the two are used together.
Well, there's always the concern of a new chemical to put on my body, a new chemical to this, a new chemical to that, that all oftentimes raises concerns with people go, well, I want to go more organic. That's the big buzzword these days is organic this and organic that.
Yes.
You got to balance science with nature somehow. And so is there a way that we can put something more natural? Is there something natural I can slather on me, like the old aloe plant that my uncle used to snap off and rub on my skin in Texas?
Aloe won't help you.
Oh, okay.
Not
so he was wrong.
But zinc oxide is organic. It's natural. It's a ground-up mineral. Same with titanium dioxide.
Yep.
Those are inert. They are physical barriers. They're not chemicals. They're physical barriers to sun. So if you don't want chemicals, look for sunscreens that just have those two ingredients, and there are plenty of them. The best products probably have mostly a combination of both the physical blocks, titanium and zinc, along with some of the more tried and true chemical blocks, such as ethyl hexyl methoxycinnamate.
Easy for you to say.
Yes. Now, there are some people who have problems with reactions to sunscreen chemicals. It happens. And there have been some questions about oxybenzone recently, the notion that it interferes with hormones and such. While those fears are probably way overplayed, less chemicals overall is perhaps better than more. But all sunscreen chemicals are not created equally.
Sounds good. Anyway, we're talking with Dr. Craig Crawford here on Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back. We're taking your phone calls at area code 530-605-4567. Give us a call or give us a listen online at kcnr1460.com. We'll be right back. KCNR. And welcome back to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460. Clearly, it's the home of Free Fire Media. We're taking your phone calls at 605-4567, and we're talking about skin with local dermatologist Dr. Craig Crawford. And we were talking during the break about some of the things that people always bring up, and it seems like the biggest thing is acne. We get it as teenagers. Sometimes we get it as adults. If I eat a lot of chocolate, doctor, am I going to break out with acne? Is the big, thing we heard when I was growing up. What can I do for it?
Actually, for years, dermatologists in this country have said that acne is not influenced by diet. But some of the latest research that's coming to the fore suggests that actually it is. And it has to do with the glycemic index. So folks talked about the idea that drinking milk causes acne and so on and so forth. Well, drinking milk, it means taking on a large sugar load. So
right.
In countries where there is a low glycemic index, acne is almost unheard of. So it has to do with a very healthy diet actually contributing to acne. So will dietary measures really correct acne? Not in this country, not with Carl's Jr., McDonald's, and Burger King, et cetera. So no. And even if one eats healthy, one eats well in this country, generally speaking. So it's unlikely that dietary measures alone, unless they're extreme, will address acne. And there are certainly much better, safer, and more proven ways to address acne. Certainly diets can be safe, but extreme diets are like anything that's extreme. They're not necessarily safe.
So acne, is that just more than just I get a little zit, pimple on my skin, or is it something much deeper than that? Maybe I don't clean my face well enough, or I get them on my arm sometimes.
Right. Well, acne is something that, when you think about it, it can be just a minor nuisance, but when it is psychologically or physically scarring, it's a disease and it needs to be addressed. And acne scars can be permanent, so dealing with acne before that happens is really something that's important, and certainly important in our practice. We want to take care of people and get them past their acne without them getting scarred or socially damaged. And so acne is caused really by the effect of hormones on the follicular units that are present all over the skin. These follicular units have tiny hairs that you really can't see without a magnifier, and they have oil glands. And the oil comes out of the gland, goes through a little duct around the hair, and comes out onto the skin. Those ducts, under the influence of hormones, tend to get blocked. And it has really nothing to do with cleanliness or habits and something to do, perhaps, with glycemic index. But that's new information. But diet really isn't the answer, and changing habits really isn't the answer. And if you wonder about cleanliness, just go by any place where people are unable to walk. Uh-huh. Be they homeless, be they in a different environment,
right.
What have you, be they soldiers in the field. There's no greater increase of acne, or they don't have a bigger acne problem. So it's not a cleanliness issue. It's a hormonal issue for the most part, and the reaction of those hormones on the skin.
So what do we do? What do we do? We come to see you, and what's our course of action?
Well, there really are two ways to deal with acne. One is to suppress it until the acne-prone time goes away. And in teenagers, that's often the case, that it will pass. And the other way is to use more aggressive methods that actually put the acne into remission. And a lot of times that remission is permanent and complete. And that medicine, which is one of the medicines that's got the most unfair bad rap in of all medicines on the planet, is Accutane. Well, Accutane as a brand is gone now because of the trial lawyers and because of generic competition, but it's known as isotretinoin. And there are some minor problems with isotretinoin, but there are major problems created by the FDA and the trial attorneys, actually. So the big problem with Accutane is that if a woman is pregnant and on Accutane, it causes the cells to differentiate in a different way with the result of birth defects. Accutane is a normally occurring body chemical. It's a natural body chemical. If you give patients with acne large doses of this body chemical for a period of time, it changes those little follicles so that they don't get sticky and blocked up anymore, and the acne then goes away. So the issue of pregnancy and birth defects is a major issue. It's a major health issue, it's a major political issue, and it has required a very extreme federal program to ensure that women of childbearing potential who take this medicine do not get pregnant.
And that is a warning, though, on the label, and that was when it first came out. I remember, you know, the big warnings on TV, do not take this if you are pregnant or planning on becoming pregnant, which seems to be a standard line on any medication that comes out. You know, my question is what percentage of women that were pregnant that did take Accutane, you know, was it like 12%, 10%, 2% of the sample that created this,
litigious
firestorm?
Well, it's a small percent of patients who've taken Accutane and went on to have children that actually had birth defects, but it's real, and it can be substantial. So it's very, very important that women do not get pregnant on this medicine. And so what happened was unresponsible doctors and patients did get pregnant, and this is a problem. And particularly when we had a very right-wing government, the idea is that it's extremely important because birth defects are terrible, and you know, and sort of terminating a pregnancy because you had a pregnancy on this medicine is also terrible, and some political and cultural groups feel very strongly about that. So during the Bush years, the program to monitor these folks increased greatly, and of course the price of the medicine now is doubled or tripled, even though it's generic, because of the monitoring that's required. There's computer monitoring, there's monthly visits, it's all extremely regimented. The program is called I Pledge, and it's I pledge not to get pregnant, basically.
So when I come in and prescribe Accutane for my acne, we got to fill out a bunch of paperwork, don't we?
You do as well, even though you're a man.
Yeah.
It's not an issue for men. It's simply an issue for women. Yeah. But there are two other things that have come up with Accutane that are, I wouldn't say they're bogus, but they're 99% bogus. And the one is depression. And the other one is colitis. So the ads you're seeing on TV have to do with colitis.
Colitis,
yes. So we're going to talk about those two issues because they're important. The first one is, we'll talk about those probably after the break, but the one is suicidal ideation and depression, and is it related to Accutane? And the other one is ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. Does Accutane precipitate those?
And those seem to be the two big ones when you see these ads on TV. If you take an X, you know, medication and you've been subject to depression, Crohn's disease, colitis, please call us. We're going to get you millions. And those seem to be the two big things I've been seeing on TV and in those ads lately. So,
yes. And
we'll go ahead and talk about that after the break. We do have to take a quick break here. And you're listening to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460. Give us a call if you've got a question about skin or skin-related issues. Dr. Craig Crawford's here for you. The phone number is 605-4567. We'll be right back. 1460. Dr. Trudy Pratt is on special assignment today, so we've got Dr. Craig Crawford, a local dermatologist, in. We're talking about skin and skin issues. We were talking about acne and Accutane and some of the political stuff that goes on with it. It's a miracle drug. It heals your acne and it's natural. So
yes.
Why should I be worried about it?
Well, because the government wants you to be worried about it. And there's a certain fellow out of Michigan named Bart Stupak. He's the guy that snuck in the health care bill, by the way.
Yes.
So he's infamous even now, and he was so loathed for it that he's not even running for re-election. Anyway, Bart Stupak's son, who was crazy well before Accutane, as far as anyone can tell, committed suicide and had been prescribed that medicine. And so Bart Stupak went on the rampage and got this suicide warning information on Accutane. And the facts are this, that in large series of people that have been studied with age-matched controls, the suicide rate on Accutane is lower than those not on Accutane. And mental health scores of patients taking Accutane compared with age-matched controls are better. So Accutane is not associated with suicide or suicidal ideation or depression in any way we can tell. However, you will find certain very rare individuals who swear that it does cause mood disturbances that come and go with them going on and off the medicine. So is it 100% that it never causes a problem? Hard to say. 100% is a lot. Is it in big studies associated with bad outcomes in terms of depression and suicide? Actually, quite the opposite. And in fact, new information has just come out this week that shows that just having acne makes people have suicidal ideation and depression.
I was going to say, if you got rid of the acne and you looked in the mirror and you go, man, I look so much better than I did 6 weeks ago, that would be a positive mental outlook. I mean, when I have a clean face, I'm looking good, feeling good.
Absolutely. And now the other thing has to do with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. And what's happened is that trial attorneys have gotten a hold of certain juries and got large awards for their folks who developed Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis during adolescence.
Now, let's clarify some terms. Crohn's disease, not everybody knows what it is. Ulcerative colitis.
Okay, these are inflammatory disorders of the intestines. Basically, your intestines, with ulcerative colitis, your colon gets very swollen and oozy and red, and it's really bad, and it's hard to control, and ultimately the colon has to be removed because otherwise colon cancer occurs. With Crohn's disease, it's more like big knots of inflammation develop in the colon and things break down and even can erupt onto the skin. So these are
serious
diseases, and they're hard to treat. And they often occur in adolescence, which is the same time that acne occurs. And so we have the situation of patients have acne during teen years, and they get these other conditions as well. And so does one cause the other is the question. And so there have been very, very detailed studies, and they've found essentially no link. But if there is a link, it might be 1 in 10,000 cases of colitis might be related to Accutane in some way. Nevertheless, there's this whole question about what happens in severe acne, because many patients taking Accutane have really severe acne. With severe acne, the immune system's just going nuts, and you're getting these big, red, painful knots,
right,
which is what happens in the colon. So it may be that there's an immune disorder that's making the acne so bad it's also contributing to an increased risk.
And we can see the acne on the face. We can't see what's going on inside.
Right, so there's no clear, credible link. But because trial attorneys have been able to get trial settlements of millions of dollars, they are out there trolling for other people to try to put the cases forward. So it's a trial lawyer's scam.
Yeah.
It's a scam.
So you could say that the onset of acne and Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, is kind of what's going on in the body anyways through the teen years, because now we're making this big hormonal shift and our body is trying to keep up and react to it, and one out of 10,000 is now going to have an odd reaction to what's going on naturally in the body.
And it's dubious whether it's even that high. So if there's a link, it's something that can't be determined even in very large series of studies. So there's really effectively, that's not a risk. Suicide, not a risk. Pregnancy, yeah, that's a real issue, and that's where this other stuff tends to come from. But Accutane is not a fun drug to take. It's not pleasant. But 5 months of pills, no more acne, it's a really good deal, and it has done thousandfold more good than any potential bad that it's ever done. The drug is one of our true miracle drugs, and it remains that even today as it's under assault.
So the great positives outweigh the minor negatives.
Absolutely. The FDA has seriously considered pulling this drug more than once, but it'll just go, you know, out of country, and you'll be shipping it in on the internet. I mean, that drug is not going away. It's simply too good.
Too good. And it's not called Accutane anymore these days. You mentioned generics.
They're branded generics, all of them, and all of them have to have this program, the safety program, for both men and women, believe it or not. The brand names are Sotret, Clarivis, Amnestine. Those are the three generic brands that are out there right now. So that was an interesting little talk. So Accutane, great drug.
Got a bad rap.
It's safe when it's administered by people who know what they're doing with it. I think that our practice probably has prescribed more Accutane in the past 10 years than just about any other in the state. I like drugs at work. I like helping patients. This drug is safe when administered properly.
Now, is there a big difference between taking a pill and using topical creams when it comes to dealing with skin issues, not just acne, pimples, but rosacea? You know, are the topicals don't want to get into something real big right here. We're coming up on a break in about a minute and a half. But topicals versus taking a tablet or a pill.
It depends on the patient. One size does not fit all. And rosacea, that's a whole big can of worms, because rosacea encompasses a lot of different things that end up with the same endpoint of redness and dilated blood vessels and pimple-like bumps on the face.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We're talking to Dr. Craig Crawford on skin today. Call us at 605-4567 if you've got a question, and I'm sure you do because I have questions. We'll talk to you in just 2 minutes. On KC. Welcome back to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460. We're talking skin today with Dr. Craig Crawford. And if you've got a question, we've got a few minutes left here. 605-4567. I know we were going to talk about rosacea, but I do have a question that bugs me. Ingrown hairs. Shaving. I shave up. I shave down. I shave left. I shave right. I use, you know, this cream, that gel, that foam. I got 5 blades, 2 blades. I don't shave every day. I shave every day, and I still have the same problem. You know, I come to your office and say, Doc, help me.
Okay. It is a common problem, and some people are just more prone to this problem than others, even if they do everything right. But you can stack the odds in your favor. It's important to understand what the problem is first, so that once there's an understanding of the problem, it's easier to address it in theory and practice. The problem with ingrown hairs is simply that if the hairs get cut too short, then as they start to try to grow out, they'll get caught on the outermost part of the skin and turn under. So actually getting too close of a shave is too close of a shave, and you'll have problems. So there's close, and then there's too close. And so what one wants to do is get a very even, close shave that doesn't allow for the hairs to get caught on their way back up and out. Well, how do you do that? Well, the first thing is it's important to understand that hair has very different tensile strength properties when it's wet versus dry. It goes from reinforced concrete in strength to the strength of spaghetti. So it's very important that the hair be wet and, in fact, a little bit waterlogged before shaving occurs. That's why the best time to shave is at the end of the shower.
And that's when I shave.
Good.
But I don't shave in the shower. I shave when I get out of the shower. Does that make a big difference?
It may make some difference because you may have some drying out of the hair, but perhaps not. Depends.
Okay.
So the other thing is you need to use good equipment. Now, for some people, for example, African Americans have really kinky hair. They need because they tend to really curl under.
Right.
So they actually need a special type of shaving gear that lets the hairs be a little bit longer at the end of the shave. But for you, Eric, and for most of the Caucasian folks in this particular environment, that's not an issue. That's called a PFB razor for pseudofolliculitis barbae. I don't think you need that. Yeah. And most people in this area don't. But there is special equipment for those folks. But what you need is really good equipment. The disposable razors, where the whole razor is disposable,
yeah,
tend to be of poorer quality. And
I don't use those. Never use those.
Good. So you want to use a metal handle or a reusable handle
with
a throwaway blades.
Got
and
that.
You want to change them out every week or two. You don't want them to get too old.
Okay, I do that.
Okay. And then when you want to use something as a lubricant, it can be soap, it can be shaving cream, it doesn't really matter, but there needs to be a lubricant to help ease the flow of the razor.
Now, does aloe, lanolin, and all those extra for sensitive skin, does that make a difference, or does it just need to be some kind of soapy stuff?
It just needs to be a lubricant.
Lubricant.
So soap, shaving cream, whatever it is, something that helps the glide be easier as a lubricant. So that's important. And then what we're trying to do here is get the hair short but not too short. And that means that you have to go with the grain. Do not do strokes sideways to the grain or against the grain, because if you do, you'll tend to yank the hairs up and out and cut them too short, and then they'll sort of retract back into the skin and have more of a propensity to cause ingrowns. So go with the grain.
I go with the grain.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you need to minimize repeat strokes. I mean, think of it as cutting your lawn. You wouldn't go back over the same place 5 times. It would be too much energy. But in this case, the more times you go over it, the more likely you are to get the hairs too short so that they curl under. So minimize repeat strokes.
Okay, I don't do that. I do tend to mow the same place every, you know, three or four or five times, then go on to the next.
I mean, you can feel if the hairs are too long, you obviously have to shave it
right.
again. But you want to try to minimize them. And then the other thing is that there's a tendency for us to stretch the skin so that we can really get the... You don't want to stretch the skin. You want to shave in a relaxed position, because if you stretch the skin, you're actually thinning out the skin so that when you cut the hairs flush and then relax the skin, they go under.
Okay, that's another thing I do is I... You know, you were talking, you know, pull it tight, and get in here.
And there are a number of prescription products that you can use on the skin to help minimize the tendency for ingrowns. But there's one thing that's actually not prescription that you can buy at Derm Store, which I do not own, but you can buy it there. It's called Tend Skin. It's made by this dentist in Florida. He's doing well with it. Not a great businessman. I've had to deal with him, but his product is excellent. For this, so after you shave, use Tend Skin, TENDSKIN. It's got an aspirin-based ingredient and alcohol, and it really helps calm the skin and help minimize ingrown. So those steps are probably the most important things you can do. And if you're still getting ingrowns, then there may be prescription remedies that can assist you.
I do notice sometimes the hairs come out and they're bent. You know, you'll see them, and they're huge.
Right.
They'll get underneath the skin when you pull them out, or, you know, you finally get them out. There's like a little hook at the end, and in just some, you know, random search on the Internet, I came up with the pseudofolliculobarbae.
Right.
And thinking, wow, my hairs are coming out of my skin already pre-curled, and that's why they're not breaking through. That was my logical conclusion.
Right, but you don't want to have them break through. You want to have them... not cut so short that they're under.
Right.
You want to have them just at the surface, but not underneath the flesh surface. That's the key, because if they're not pushed under, they can't get caught. But yet, you want to have a nice close shave, too.
Right.
So it's a catch-22.
Right.
And that's why these little things can get you as close to flesh as possible without increasing the chance of these hairs getting caught underneath.
So it doesn't matter if I'm using single-edge... twin blades, five blades, electric, or do those really make that big a difference, or am I just buying into whatever the Madison Avenue is selling me?
I think shaving blade technology has greatly improved in recent years, and you won't get as close of a shave with an electric razor, and you will get more irritation, so those are probably best avoided for someone with your situation. The new razors, the ones with the three blades or four blades that vibrate, those are probably the best shavers on the market right now.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've seen them. They put a little battery in the handle, and they've got, I think, four blades. Is it Bic? I don't even know what brand it is.
No, I don't know. I just
mine
vibrates, but it's got a beard trimmer on the back end. So.
Yeah, so there are a number of different brands like that. But those are probably the best.
Great. Well, Doctor, let us know, where can we find you? Where are you located?
We're located up across from Benton Air Park at 2107 Air Park Drive in that beautiful remodeled building in Escorial. And we have a website, readingderm.com, and our phone number is 241-1111.
241-1111, just up there by Benton Air Park. We have less than a minute here before we go out of the show. I want to thank you for sitting in for Dr. Trudy. When she told me you were going to be here and what you were going to talk about, I was interested because I always have questions about skin.
Everyone has skin.
Everybody has skin. So, again, we thank you for joining us here today. And, again, give us a call. What's your phone number again?
241-1111.
241-1111. Well, thank you again, Dr. Crawford.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
Thanks.